Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today, it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Carolyn Boris. Carolyn packed her bags, left everything that was familiar, and moved halfway around the world. Why? She was desperate for some relief. She had already been in education for more than 20 years and experienced anxiety, panic, and dread when faced with work-life imbalance, unrealistic expectations, and the feelings of guilt and failure because she wanted something better for her life. The thought of having to stay where she was another 15 years before she could retire was incomprehensible to her. Carolyn has been an international educator now for almost 20 years, but Carolyn notes that taking such drastic measures is not doable for everyone. Changing the scene doesn't necessarily change the details. Carolyn believes there's a much simpler and faster way for effecting healthy change. Her goal is to help educators who are experiencing burnout restore their self-esteem and confidence, and to reclaim their personal power using personal proven tools and techniques that she knows provides life-changing results. The tools of rapid transformational therapy, or more commonly known as RTT, have a powerful transformative effect. RTT can help shift limiting beliefs that hold you back from reclaiming your self-esteem, confidence, sense of purpose, and personal power so that you can live the life that you envision. Carolyn, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It's a pleasure having you on the podcast today.
Thank you so much, Dave.
And as a current educator myself, as an adjunct professor of psychology child life at Utica University in Utica, New York, your path resonated with me. I know we were introduced by a mutual acquaintance, and we connected on Facebook, and here we are. So I'm very anxious to hear about your experiences and hear what you're doing to help other educators who, you know, from the experience I've had, and I know that others have experienced a lot of frustration, roadblocks, and burnout as well, just from the demands that are being placed on them now. So your bio kind of outlines very nicely the path that got you to where you're at, but tell our listeners about some additional experiences or other experiences that aren't in your bio that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
Okay, thanks. Well, before I made the decision to become an international educator, I had been already teaching for about 25 years, and I was living in Vancouver. And on the personal side of things, Vancouver was so expensive. I couldn't afford to live there. I couldn't afford to go anywhere. I couldn't afford to do anything. I was driving a 15-year-old Honda Civic with 250,000 kilometers on it, and I just prayed it would go for another 250,000 because I didn't have the money to buy a new car. And where I was living and teaching, it was in the suburbs, and I was the only single person out of the schools that I went to. I was a specialist teacher, so I went to several schools throughout the week. Way back then, how easy was it to meet people, to start forming a social circle? I mean, we don't do it the way we do it now with the internet and all of this. And so that was happening in my personal life. But professionally, it didn't matter what school I went to. Whenever I went into the staff room, the only conversations I ever heard were people talking about how many years, months, weeks, and days they had until retirement. And some of these people had 15 years till retirement. And I was hearing this and I thought, well, I was getting close to approaching my 50th birthday. And I thought, well, if I retire when I'm 65, how am I going to stand to listen another 15 years to all of this misery? And so that was happening in my professional life. My personal life, I just wasn't making any money and I wasn't happy. And I thought, I've got to do something. During that time, a friend of mine introduced me to international teaching, which I never even knew existed. I mean, I didn't have the opportunities that the young kid teachers have now. They can go here, there, and everywhere to do student teaching. I didn't know about international teaching. And so one thing led to another. And as I was approaching 50, I got my first international teaching gig in Singapore. And I thought, okay, well, turning 50 to me was a big deal because it's a pretty big number. And I thought, well, I'm on this new path now. And I decided, well, if I'm turning 50, what does that mean? So I decided my 50s were going to be my decade of adventure. I had such great adventures, Dave. I had travel adventures that I never would have had had I stayed at home. And I had professional adventures because opportunities opened up to me being in an international school that I never would have had at home. So I mean, it was a whole new world. So I decided that my 60s were going to be my decade of even more adventures. So I had even more travel adventures and I moved to a couple of different countries. And so now that I've just turned 70, I thought, well, this is like now a gigantic number. Like, what does all this mean? I decided that my 70s were going to be my decade of my second brilliant career, i.e. helping teachers with RTT. My 80s are going to be my Yoda years, because I hope by then I have some wisdom. And my 90s, I don't know, I haven't decided. But the way I got into RTT, or Rapid Transformational Therapy, is that about 5 years ago, I had a health scare. And I was fortunate enough to be given a second chance. And I know a whole lot of people aren't given a second chance. So I was mulling over, well, what do I do with this second chance? Because I have to honor it somehow. Otherwise, it's just going to be a waste. And in the meantime, I discovered rapid transformational therapy. And I'd always been interested in hypnotherapy and how the mind works. And I'd experienced hypnotherapy or hypnosis before. So I got the training in RTT. And when I realized what a powerful tool for transformation this is, I thought, well, what am I going to do with this now? And then I realized the way I can honor the second chance that I was given is to use this powerful tool to help as many of my colleagues as I can. Because in 45 years of education now, I've seen what stress has done to my colleagues. And I mean, Dave, let's face it, teachers in education are in crisis. Yep. And teachers need help. And I have a tool that can help, because I think the most important message that I would like to get across is help is available. There's no need to navigate the challenges by yourself. I mean, 30, 35 years ago, and being, you know, full transparency, there weren't the problems in education that people are experiencing now. I had problems with classroom behavior and parents and administrators like we all do, but there was not the help available then that there is now, because we didn't have access to the internet then the way we do now. So I had to navigate those challenges by myself, and it was not easy. So help is available.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the problems that educators were facing 30 or 35 years ago pale in comparison to the problems they're facing now.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
One of the things that I've heard consistently is that, you know, our state education departments have a set of core competencies, and I know you're aware of core competencies. Yes, yep. Problem with core competencies is that the state education departments want you to develop lesson plans according to the core competencies, but it doesn't factor in individual differences of the students in the classroom. Those core competencies that they just come up with generically are not going to, it's not going to be a one size fits all scenario. We are responsible for teaching the way students learn, and we have to meet them at their level. And one teaching method or one set of core competencies are not going to be the answer for all individual education plans.
Oh.
And I think that's one of the frustrations that I've heard from a lot of educators.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, the people who are making those decisions about the core competencies, for example, and people who hold the purse strings and are making all these other decisions, unless they've been inside a classroom to see what it is we have to do, they don't get it. And, you know, unless you are like a grade one teacher, for example, your big wins for that day might be the fact that all of your kids got to the bathroom and back without getting lost. Mm-hmm. That's a big win if you're a grade one teacher. But the people out there don't get that. When I was just in my second year of international teaching, when I was in Singapore, the class that I had that second year was the worst behaved class I'd had in all 25 years of teaching. Mm-hmm. And all of my tricks of the trade were not working, right? And so, and just as an aside, I found out afterwards, towards the end of that year, you see, I thought that I was imagining the fact that, you know, all of these kids are having behavior problems. And I would look, as I walked by other teachers' classrooms, I would longingly look into their rooms going, why do they get to teach? I'm not teaching. All I'm doing, I'm a sergeant major. I'm trying to manage behavior. That's all I'm doing. I'm the teacher on the team that has the most experience. How would it look if the most experienced teacher went to an inexperienced young teacher and said, I'm having trouble with classroom management. I didn't want to ask for help because I felt like a failure. I didn't find out until towards the end of that year that my class had been loaded with the behavior problems that year because I was the most experienced teacher on the team, and surely she would be able to handle all these problem kids. So my point to this story is that I had to reconcile the fact that my big win for that year was by the end of the year, those kids could walk down the hallway in a straight line quietly without running away.
Yeah.
That's what my big success was that year. But anybody who's focusing on core competencies is not going to get that. No. They're going to see everything I did was a failure. But that was a big win for those kids and for me.
There's a teaching in Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements. One of the four agreements is that he believes we can live our life by and find fulfillment is always do your best. But what he indicates is that doing our best is different depending on the situation. So with particular classroom that you had, doing your best was getting them to be able to, as a group, walk in a straight line. And we have to learn to individualize our expectations based on the strengths that a particular classroom or an individual is manifesting. And you're right, core competencies don't account for that.
No. And that year, I was with that class all day, every day. I could not trust them to, like, I had an assistant. I could not trust them at recess time or lunchtime for the assistant just to be there because chaos would reign. So I never got a break from those kids throughout the entire year.
Yep.
And, you know, I think one of the things that leads to teacher stress and perhaps to teacher burnout is the fact that we feel guilty because, like in my instance, I felt guilty that I wasn't doing my teaching job the way I thought I should be doing. And then you end up feeling like a failure because I know this isn't what I need to, what I should be doing, what I could be doing. And then you also feel, you know, that whole imposter syndrome thing, like, well, if I can't manage a group of 5-year-olds, what kind of I must not be a good teacher. I mean, when they find out I can't do this, they're going to fire me because I'm a terrible teacher. So we've got all of these looping thoughts going around in our head. And that just exacerbates the whole problem. Instead of feeling that I could go and ask for help, I went even further inwards and I kept it all to myself. And honestly, Dave, I don't think there was a day that went by when I was going home, when I wasn't crying on the way home. And I dreaded going to school the next day. And honestly, I thought, if on my way home, I see a help wanted sign in some fast food joint, I'm going in there because I didn't sign up for this. So, you know, and I think more than I'm feeling more, you know, it's more than just me and my situation with people feeling like guilt and a sense of failure and imposter syndrome. And honestly, you know, Dave, I've been reading like these teacher Facebook threads. And you know how earlier we said teaching today was not like when we were teaching like 30, 35 years ago, because there are huge problems today. But at one point in time, I was reading somebody, more than one person, who said, I found my tree. And when I asked on the Facebook, what do you mean? Well, people are in such distress. They're finding a tree they want to drive into on the way home from work. So, and I was flabbergasted with that. And somebody who is from the UK, who is also on this thread, said, in the UK, we call it not finding a tree. We call it finding a wall or finding a bridge. Dave, how did teaching come to this? It's heartbreaking is what it is. And wow, that's all I can think is like, oh my gosh. What some teachers are dealing with, I don't know how they're still able to stay where they are. Now, I know that, you know, as you read in my biography, I know that doing what I did is not doable for everybody. I know that. But I had nothing keeping me back home. But people have to stay because of, for lots of different reasons, aging parents, and they're the single breadwinner, and so on and so forth. So the fact that people are still there because they can't move, I mean, people need help. Yeah. They need help. So I just want to say, help is available. It really is.
And speaking of help, this is a nice segue into the next question. I'd like to have you tell our listeners about Carolyn Boris Hypnotherapy and the services you provide to those individuals who request them. And what do you believe the impact of those services are? And I know one of the things you provide is RTT, or Rapid Transformational Therapy. So that might be also a good time to go into what that is and how that works with the individual that you serve as well.
Yes. Rapid Transformational Therapy is a hybrid of hypnotherapy, psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and also neurolinguistic programming. And in Rapid Transformational Therapy, we use specialized tools and techniques to access the subconscious through hypnosis. And when we access the subconscious, we can get at the limiting beliefs that are holding people back. Once you understand what the limiting belief is, where you acquired it, like when and why you acquired it, then in hypnosis, we can flip that belief, and then we can flip the belief so that you have beliefs that work for you, that can give you the life that you envision. So, you know, many of us don't even know the limiting beliefs that we have, but limiting beliefs drive our behavior, and our behavior produces our outcomes. Many of us don't know the limiting beliefs that are driving our behavior. We just know we keep getting the same thing over and over again, and we're stuck, and we don't know why. if we imagine that a limiting belief is like an anchor is responsible for keeping a boat right where it is. It doesn't move. And it's underneath the surface of the water. We don't see the anchor. We just know the boat is not moving. So if we think of a limiting belief as that anchor that is keeping us stuck, when we can flip limiting belief, it's like cutting that chain that is keeping the limiting belief anchored to you. And you know, Dave, once people transform their limiting beliefs, then they start remembering their superpowers. Because once, when we are in the depths of despair and we think our whole entire life is a mess and nothing is working, when we flip the limiting beliefs and transform them, then we start remembering, oh yeah, I bought my first house. I ran my first marathon. I had my first baby. I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. We start remembering our accomplishments. Then we can start moving ahead towards the life that we want. But you can't change what you don't know. So if you know what is holding, then you can do something about it. And I think if we imagine that incident equals belief, so whatever has happened to us, we formed a belief about ourselves. So if your brother called you fat when you were 10, well, then you formed a belief about yourself.
That's right.
Limiting beliefs also affect how we react to stress. So if we have the limiting belief that we're not good enough, then we overcompensate by taking on too much to prove to ourselves and to other people that we are enough. And doing all of that leads to stress and could eventually lead to burnout. And so I think that another point I'd like to make is that, you know, stress doesn't just knock on the door of teachers. I mean, teachers aren't the only ones who experience stress. I mean, we've all experienced stress at various points in our lives to various degrees. Some people have experienced burnout, right? Yep. So RTT, Rapid Transformational Therapy, can help anybody who's feeling stuck, who wants to move forward. And I'll give you a few examples of some of the clients I've had. I worked with a school principal who was having problems remembering the names of the kids in her school and also the names of the parents. Now, that's problematic when you're a school principal, right? Mm-hmm. So when we did the session, we found out where her memory problem developed and what happened. We cleared up that issue. Not only did her memory for remembering names improve, but she's also a dancer. So it helped her memory of what the dance routines were because she was having problems remembering the dance routines. Mm-hmm. I worked with another teacher who was feeling totally unmotivated. And not only in her work, but also in her personal life. When we did the session, the motivation was tied to the self-confidence, which was tied to the self-esteem. And the self-esteem issue arose because of an incident that happened early on in her marriage. So when we got to the bottom of that, it collapsed the confidence issue, which collapsed the motivation issue. And she's now marking everything off her list that she wanted to do. Like, she doesn't have any problems with her motivation now. Another example is I've worked recently with a former teacher who's now starting her own business. And she was doing fine, but she felt stuck. She felt bored. She felt unmotivated. And in her session, we found out that she was being held back by guilt. She felt guilty for wanting to be successful. And she also felt guilty because she knew she could be more successful than anybody else in her family. So those are just a few examples of how RTT and hypnotherapy can help.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that I like about it is it combines the best of hypnotherapy with cognitive behavioral therapy, where you're doing belief restructuring. As a former therapist, I used to work with a lot of individuals who had limiting beliefs. The more belief is reinforced, the more it leads to behavior that is going to support that belief. So what we have to do is make a conscious effort to put that belief on the table and say, this no longer serves us. How can we modify that belief so that we are engaging in more proactive and productive behavior. Cognitive behavioral therapy has proven to be such an important evidence-based practice with a variety of different mental health challenges that that seems to be the way to go. Especially when I worked with individuals with addiction, if they had multiple relapse episodes, we would find out it was usually the limiting beliefs that kept them stuck and told them that they were not capable of achieving long-term sobriety that we had to work on. So I think it's very effective. Also, do you record the sessions and allow the client to hear those back?
I don't record the session. What we do is the system of having an RTT session is such that you first contact me and we have a free discovery call. So we both find out in the first place whether we can work together, whether we're a good fit. I find out whether I can help the person with this issue because there are certain things I choose not to work with, which is, you know, fine. But also the important thing is to find out whether the person is schizophrenic, psychotic, personality behavior disorder, or epileptic, because they cannot be involved in hypnosis. So if the person decides to then continue on with me, then we have a 1-hour intake call. And that's where I get detailed information. So I find out, okay, what is the presenting problem? And, you know, you may have experienced, sometimes clients come to you with a shopping list of things they want to clear up, right? Well, okay, but we're only going to work on one thing right now. So what is the most important thing on your shopping list? And so then we talk about, well, what are the symptoms, triggers, and habits? You know, how do you know that this particular thing happens? And we talk about family situation, what happened in your childhood, so on and so forth. And then the really important, two really important questions are, if I had a magic wand and I could give you anything you wanted, what would you want from this session? And then the really, really important question is, if you no longer had this issue, what would your life look like?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you get them to describe that future in such rich, rich, rich detail. Then we have the session, which is 1.5 to 2 hours. That's where we use the techniques and the tools. And then in that session, we do a transformation. And then they get that bespoke transformation as a recording. So in that transformation, we talk to them in their own words, telling them what it is they want. Now that they're in hypnosis, you know, we're embedding that, right? Because that's what they said they wanted. Once they get that recording, then they listen to that recording for a minimum of 21 days, right? 21 days to a month. And then in that month, then there's constant follow-up. You know, how are things going? What have you noticed? So on and so forth. When we have the follow-up call, sometimes, well, with RTT, the reason that it's rapid transformational therapy is that many issues, not all issues, many issues can be resolved in 1 to 3 sessions. It depends on the issue. It depends on the person. Now, and some issues, as I say, can be resolved in like one session, like phobias, for example, you know. And so at the end of that follow-up, the client might decide, okay, this is now resolved. See you later or see you never, which is fine. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they might say, well, now this has come up, so I'd like to work on this now. So it's totally up to them, right? But I think what is really interesting in doing this work is that Marissa Peer, who's the one who developed rapid transformational therapy, you know, over, I don't know, she's been working in it now, what, 30 years or whatever, and has had thousands of clients. She has said that in all of her experience, there are only 3 things that are wrong with people. They either think they're not enough, like they're not tall enough, they're not short, they're not pretty enough, they're not rich enough, they're not enough. They can't connect, or what they want is not available to them. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting, the people that I've dealt with, you know, they come with these issues, but when you get right down to it, it's like, well, they didn't feel that they could be successful. They thought their mom didn't love them because they felt abandoned when the mom had to leave them in the hospital for a week. Well, the kid is three, and you know, in your three-year-old brain, you don't understand what's happening. So you can't ask the questions, you know? No. So it's very interesting.
Well, really experience matters. And I think the three basic issues that Carolyn Peer, is it Carolyn Peer or Marilyn Peer?
Yeah, Marissa Peer.
Okay, Marissa Peer. You know, all the last two stem from the first one is that I'm not good enough. And everything else kind of flows from that. And with early experience, if they've come from unhealthy family situations and they've heard messages that have reinforced or implanted that belief that they're not good enough, their narrative isn't changed early on. It's going to carry on into any profession, carry on into their relationships, and particularly will probably show up in their teaching career. In reality, it's a system that needs to be fixed and not the individuals.
Yes. And, you know, I find also it's really interesting when teachers, I mean, when I said earlier that not everybody needs to move halfway around the world, that part is true. And I think that when you are in the thick of things and when you think that nothing in your life is working, you have to change everything, that's not necessarily true. Because for some people, they might only need to change grade level, or maybe they need to change school, or maybe they need to change school district, or maybe they need to move across the city. Mm-hmm. If it's possible, maybe move to another state or another province, maybe move across the country if that's doable, or maybe move across the world if that's doable. But also for other people, they might really, really need and want to change profession. Maybe it really isn't for them. But then all of that imposter syndrome and I'm not good enough starts to come in because, you know, how many times have you heard this phrase? I'm just a teacher. Mm-hmm. I'm just a teacher. You know, who's going to hire me because I'm just a teacher? Well, we know all the skills that we need to have to function successfully in a classroom, to deal with all of these human beings day after day for 10 months. But, you know, many times the problem is when people are writing their resumes or CVs, they're writing it in teacher language. Nobody in the corporate world understands what it means when you say, I have great classroom management experience. What does that mean in the corporate world? It's not necessarily imposter syndrome, I'm not good at it. It's just, you don't know how to write your CV or resume to talk to the people in the profession you want to get at. Mm-hmm. And then also, when people have managed to get an interview either at another school or for a job outside of education, then people have public speaking fears. I've read conflicting reports on this. Some reports say that public speaking is the first greatest fear and death is the second. And other people have written public speaking is the second greatest fear and death is the first greatest. Whatever. People are scared to death of public speaking. Mm-hmm. So then they've got the whole public speaking issue. That's it. Oh, I'm never going to get through this interview. I always stutter when I go through that. I don't speak loud enough. Well, honestly, Dave, I've worked with several people with public speaking issues. Man, that flips in a second when you get back to what was the thing that happened way back when that caused you to think that you couldn't public speak. Many times, it's something that a teacher said.
Yeah.
Not all the time. I had one client who it was something that her grandmother and her great aunts said to her over and over again. And when we had the session, this was a person who couldn't speak even amongst her friends, when there were more than two people in the group. Shortly after our session, she said, well, Carolyn, I can't talk to you next week because I'm doing a 7-hour workshop. I'm like, okay. And then she just emailed me a couple of weeks ago. She's now doing a 5-day workshop. So it's empowering people to do what it is they want to do.
Yeah, so, and it sounds like RTT is a great vehicle for empowerment.
Absolutely. And, you know, yes, yeah, I agree.
What are some international education practices that can be integrated with educational practices in the United States to mitigate the stressors that teachers in the United States experience?
You know, I was thinking about that question, and my answer to that is every school in every country is going to be different. And so it's not like teaching in a school district where there is a head, you know, the school district office, and then all of this stuff comes from the top down, and then all these schools are doing the same thing. It's not that at all. I mean, you are, like, there's no union, for one thing. You're on your own. And so that means you need to do your research into the school and into the country to make sure that you know, as far as possible, what that school is actually about. Because there are schools that have the word international in their name, and they're not international at all. That's just to put bums in seats, as it were. And the curriculum is totally local, and you're dealing with local kids. You're not dealing with international students. My first international gig in Singapore, it was truly an international school because we had over 70 nationalities. It just opened my eyes, right? There are some schools that say that they are the American International School of wherever. It's not an American curriculum at all. There's nothing American about it. Again, it's just in the name to attract people. International teaching is so different because, you know, where I was teaching, kindergarten or ECE, early childhood teachers, up to grade three, everybody had an assistant in their classroom. Who gets an assistant back home? Nobody gets an assistant. And there were the learning support people and all the support that the teachers don't get back home. There were specialists who came in, like I was a music and a drama specialist in this one international school. Teachers were getting 8 prep periods per week. When I left Canada, in Vancouver, you were getting 1 prep time a week. And these teachers are getting 8 prep times a week. And that's like totally different. Another difference is you get all of this support. And if you are working in a for-profit school, then that affects the resources because you can't just go out and spend money here, there, and everywhere because they're always cutting back on resources. But if you're working in a school that is not a for-profit school where all of the money from tuition gets turned right back into the school and into teacher salaries, I tell you, then you've got all kinds of materials at your fingertips and all kinds of resources and field trips that you can go on. The schools I worked at, kids went on field trips to different countries, for example. I mean, where does that happen back home? Kids were going on field trips to Australia and to India. It's just mind-boggling the things that are available to you in international education. So it would be like trying to compare apples and oranges. Yeah.
But also it sounds like they're more resource-friendly, they're more teacher-centered, and if we can incorporate some of those components into American education, the teacher morale might be a little bit more improved. You're not going to see people counting down for retirement 15 years before they're retiring. So
exactly. So. But what school districts or government offices are going to release money like that? That's the thing, right?
Yeah. And it's something that's going to need to be a commitment to widespread systemic change throughout the United States. And as we know, systemic change moves very slowly and occurs very slowly. Hopefully we can throw the intent out there, and intention is a powerful predictor of what may happen. If we keep throwing the intent and energy out to that, maybe we might see a world where in the United States where educators are happy about their jobs and they're not taking their jobs as an indictment of who they are personally or their inefficiencies when it is the system that is at fault. So
Exactly.
One of my last questions for you today is, if you're going to leave our listeners with one thing today, what would that be?
It would be help is available. You don't need to do this by yourself. It's so important to have a support system Now, whether you talk to friends, colleagues, or family, if that's not appropriate, there are support groups out there, and there are professionals out there. Please find support system, find help, instead of, you know, finding the tree that you're going to drive into.
Yep.
What I would like to do is I want to help as many teachers as possible. And, you know, Dave, I think of it as, you know, the teacher in the classroom, it's like your own little empire, right? And so the empire or the organization is only as good as the person at the top. And, you know, water runs down. And so if the person at the top is running out of the classroom during the middle of the day to go and cry in the bathroom because of the stress, or if that person is getting to school in the morning and can't bear the thought of getting out of the car to go into the building, my question is, what kind of teaching and learning is happening in that classroom that day? And so if I can help one teacher, then that's like dropping a pebble into the, and the ripple effect. Then she's helping the kids who are going home and they're interacting differently with the parents, and that feeds out into the community and into the big world. But, you know, Dave, I don't want to drop a pebble. I'd like to drop a big boulder and have those waves go out exponentially, right? To capture as many people as possible who need help so that they can create a better world, right?
Well, and the impact we have on one teacher or one individual requesting our services, that could be a trickle-down effect. It could have what they've learned, they're going to pass on. And in that way, we continue to go on long after we've transitioned to new existence. How can individuals get in touch with you if they want to contract for your services, want to find out more about what you're doing? What's the best way for them to do that, Carolyn?
They can contact me on my website, carolynborishypnotherapy.com, and there is a way that you can contact me for the discovery call. You can email me, carolyn@carolynborishypnotherapy.com. I have some free resources for people. I've got a couple of free audios. I've got a free journal and work for somebody who likes to journal and do affirmations. I also have something free called SOS Toolkit for Teachers. And it is 10 different activities that people can do to help reduce stress, like visualizations and guided imagery. I provided scripts for each of the activities so people can record themselves reading the script, and then they can have their own voice in their ear. Mm-hmm. It's like having a therapist in your back pocket, you know? And then I've also got the well-being audio program that's also there, that's got 40 audios that deal with different things that teachers deal with, like Sunday night scaries and looping thoughts and panic attacks and that sort of thing. So please get a hold of me, because I would love to find out how I can help.
Yeah. And your passion for helping other educators who are experiencing burnout, stress, disillusionment with their positions cannot be questioned. So if I was an educator experiencing those symptoms, I'd call you in a heartbeat, Carolyn. So
thank you so much, Dave. Thanks.
Well, thank you for being a valuable guest contributor today on the Teaching Journeys podcast. I enjoyed our conversation tremendously.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.